हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। चार ओके सो सत प्रीस आर दीपिका एंड द समवर्तन सेरेमोनी सो दिस इज ग्रेजुएशन। ओके देन दिस सेरेमोनी इज परफॉर्म व्हेन द स्टूडेंट फिनिशेस हिज वैदिक स्टडीज। फुटनोट: The Samavarta samskara is performed for those students, Upakorvana brahmacharis, who, after completing their studies, have decided to eventually live as a grihastha or a married man, rather than accept the vow of naishtika, permanent brahmacharya. Because the graduate student is sprinkled with water in the ceremony, he's called snataka, means one who has been bathed, you know, or one who has been anointed, if you want to go that direction. A snata is considered ready to teach, and he may attend seminars given by others to further his knowledge. Right, so he's, in other words, in the gurukul he went to, then the teachers there, what they know and everything, he'll have studied according to whatever was his particular angle. But there might be others who have further knowledge in a specific area that they want to excel in. So at this time after graduation and before marriage, that would generally be the time where they would continue further studies. You know, any kind of, you know, specialized studies. So it wouldn't be the general studies so much. It would be the specialized, like they want to, you know, just like, let's say, Dronacharya, he's teaching the martial arts, right? So it doesn't mean that these other princes didn't go to their gurukuls and learn the Veda and all the things that they do, but then when the time came, then they went to his school and they'd further their study there. Or if they were the, you know, Kauravas or Pandavas, then they went to his school and learned all the Vedas and everything and the martial arts. You know, so it, does that make sense? So it'd be somebody knows something that you want to go further in. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone's teaching deity worship, but not, let's say, festivals or, you know, the Brahmotsavas. So you might go somewhere else to learn that. Or you learn the yajnas, but not the samskars or these kind of things. Or generally, you want to go deeper into something because another teacher has some knowledge that would be beneficial that you could gain from. So, does that make sense? So that's the time that you go there. So generally, it would traditionally be like they'd spend a year as a snataka and either go out to the holy places or go for special education or things like that. So in other words, it's a time to get out, see the world, because once you get married, then you have to stick to your occupation. You can't just travel around and do things as much. So then the idea is that this time after graduation and before marriage, then that would be the time when we wouldn't do any kind of special things, get out, see the world. You know, it's just like sometimes the kids go, they finish their graduation. I mean, they finish their 12th year. Then sometimes they'll travel for a year and then they'll go to university, or they'll go to university, then travel for a year, then get into a job or go into higher studies or, you know, so it's a kind of standard thing. People naturally, you know, some people are more active and more, those who are generally more, yeah. They get in, it's not an uncommon kind of mentality. So this would be the Vedic system, then how they would do that. So now that they're a snataka, they're recognized as a proper Brahmin who's been trained and who is qualified to teach in whatever their area they learned in, right, according to their nature. If they're Brahmins, right, if they're Kshatriyas or Vaishyas, then they'll go out further their studies or like for Vaishyas, maybe not studies, but for further their piety. And all that, because the more pious you are, then the more beneficial your business will be or your administration will be like that. But for if they're Brahmins, then they would be accepted as someone who's qualified to teach. So people might ask them questions, take take some advice from them or have them do things, you know, ceremonies for them and things like that. On the day of the Samavartana, the Acharya should perform Vasudeva Archanam and Satvika Vridhi Shraddha. Then he should perform Prushandika rites up to the end of Virupaksha, establishing the fire named Tejaha. The Brahmacharya is to sit on his right-hand side, right? So then he would sit next to him, you know, while the Acharya does the teacher. Here, Acharya is the general term for teaching by example. So whatever it is he's teaching in the school, he's following that. That's his lifestyle. In other words, you teach things that are your lifestyle. You know, that's your area of knowledge and things like that. So that's why then the term Acharya is here. It means we generally use it to mean someone's a Pancharatrik initiating guru and like this. But here, Acharya simply means he's a teacher that can teach you, you know, generally the depth of things in your study, not just the, generally the Acharya is beyond just being an Upadhyaya, that he can teach his subject nicely. It means that he can teach the whole lifestyle and everything, right? That's the whole idea. Because the Guru Kul means they're teaching the lifestyle. You might have teachers there that come that just teach a subject, right? In the Guru Kul, then you're going to have Upadhyayas who just come, let's say, they're teaching English. They come in at the, you know, before their class, teach the classes. When their classes are done, they leave. You know, or someone comes in, teaches music or teaches math, you know, general knowledge. These kind of things then are not, they don't have a depth to them. They're tools, they're useful and important. But it's not that they themselves are specifically designed for character development. Right. So that, but it's not that you couldn't learn from them, but generally most of these people don't deal in that way. Like I remember, at least from my own experience, that the ones that I would have saw that there was an element of character development, then, you know, or values like that would have been, third grade teacher. So that's a general kind of thing. Let's see. Then the metal shop and wood shop teachers in junior high, in our middle school. And then the art teacher and the carpentry teacher in high school. And also I think in maybe, I'm not sure how many grades it was, but in middle school, the person who taught I'm not sure what it was, but they were teaching things like Shakespeare and things like that. So you can see is that it may come from these, you know, the ones you generally see, the one that's more practical, then they're the ones that generally get into it because it's practical, so you're going to use it in your life, so they also teach you the proper attitude in it. While the others are just teaching you English and this and that, they don't necessarily have to teach you any character at all. Like that. So that's what I'm saying. In the modern context, then those teachers generally would be in that context. Though you might have someone who knows more and they can take it farther. And so if it goes into the Vedic subjects, like say math goes into, you know, astronomy, astrology, and all these kind of aspects, you know, or into Ayurveda or these kind of things, then they may teach the character along with it. May, but may not. Right. It's one, it's what the teacher knows. And two, it's what's the quality of the student. Right. So you know, that combination there is there. So the Acharya, the one who then, you know, does the ceremony that you join the Gurukul, you take up the kind of things, they're taking responsibility for your character development and all that. But at the same time, the student has to have a qualification to be interested also. You know, and the parents have that value also. Then in that, then you can start to train in that. But if you're dealing, let's say, in spiritual elements and stuff like that, then that's generally going to be directly have that into it, that as part of it. But, you know, you have to see is that it's up to the qualifications and the persons involved. So Acharya then would mean someone who can teach you the subtle meanings of the scriptures in line with Saddharma, right? It means you're going to be others who can just teach the material matter itself. There's others who will be able to teach the matter with the Dharma, the secondary cultural elements with it. And then those who can teach the primary of what's the spiritual and those kind of aspects there. So you're going to have those basically three levels of teachers, right? And so then the first one, that means the lowest one wouldn't be called acharya. The second one could, but it's only on the religious platform, right? You can teach by example there in the religious platform. Though he may not teach other than that, like let's say Sukracharya, he was acting in that capacity with the demons. He'd be teaching them the character and culture so that they can be successful in life materially, but he didn't get into teaching them beyond that, the spiritual. Right? And we know that he knows it because after the whole pastime with Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj, because Shankaracharya had been the Sukracharya, excuse me, had been the acharya for the yajna that Bali Maharaj was doing, right? He had his Hotri, he had his Udgata, Advaryu, and Brahma priest to manage it, but then you have the acharya, right? So the acharya could be the Brahma, but the acharya can be beyond that, that they're seeing to the spiritual elements like that, because the Brahma is like the one who does the main overall management, and the Udgata does the specific management of it running in the time frame that it goes. The Advaryu is managing all the arrangements that you offer, all the facilities and all the ingredients and all that. And the Udgata is managing, all the mantra chanting and everything what's required for that. So you need a manager to hold the other three together. That's the Brahma, but you need someone to see above that it's, the whole thing and, extended beyond however far it goes like that. So the bigger it is, then generally you'll have five like that. So he was the acharya. And so we see that he was trying to work for Bali Maharaj's material benefit, because as the guru for the demons, then naturally the materialistic aspect is what they're interested, why they come to him. So he's teaching that. But then afterwards, because he told Bali Maharaj not to give in charity these three steps of land to Vamanadeva, because it will, destroy his position. And in fact, he did. He lost everything that he owned. He had conquered the universe and he lost everything. All that was left was himself, and that was also given. So that means even that freedom he didn't have, right? So that's why he was pointing it out, because maybe he has or not has the capacity to deal with that. But when Vamanadeva, after the yajna, came to Sukracharya and asked him, so was your disciple wrong, in taking that spiritual path and surrendering to the Lord? And he said, no. He says, that's the perfection of life. So he was perfectly fine in that. But it meant he rejected his materialistic guru. And so, yes, so it was fine. He was fine with it. There was no false ego, because he knows that that's the higher principle. It's just that, in his rivalry with Brihaspati, therefore he took up teaching the demons. And demons, generally speaking, aren't interested in spiritual life. But you have a few, like Bali Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, that are famous. But other than that, you're going to have some. But it's not the major general thing. They may know about Krishna, just like we see Maya Dhanava. He knows about Krishna, knows his position, and like that. But it's not that they're interested. It's just like people know religion is there, someone's religious in the family, but they're not interested. They're okay with it. They're not threatened by it, but they don't see any need for it. So acharya means they have to be able to take you up to the religious and the proper, then to the sadharma, to the transcendental aspects. So here, then, what they're indicating is acharya means the guy who's doing the gurukul and running these things should do that. But otherwise, in general, it's just called the acharya, means he's overseeing this religious activity, so they're called acharya. Okay, so then he does the Vyasta Samasta Mahavyarati Homa. Then he should offer ghee into the fire five times, saying each of the following mantras. So then, first one, O Ananta, O Lord of Vratas, I have undertaken this Vrata. I announce to you that I have completed the vow and have satisfied you. Overcoming illusion, I have arrived at truth. Right. So we remember in the Upanayanam ceremony that then he had the opening once for the same thing. Right. So then here, this was to, he was going Ananta Vasudev Chaturbhuj, in this case, Sarveshwara, and Achyuta. Oh, maybe it's going in backwards. So it's starting here with Achyuta. Oh, this is Samavarta. And here, Ananta, ending with Achyuta. And this is Sankarsana, like that. Then Achyuta, Narayana, Vasudeva. Okay, so it's maybe some different deities, different forms of the Lord. So the first one was, O Achyuta, Lord of scriptural rules, I request that you give mercy so I can perform this Upanayanam rite. By this may I attain success. To remove illusion, I undertake this act of absolute truth. Then here, O Ananta, Lord of Vratas, I have undertaken this vow. I announce to you that I have accomplished the vow and have satisfied you. Overcoming illusion, I have arrived at truth. Right? So this act of absolute, you know, to overcome illusion. So here he's to remove illusion. Here he's saying overcoming illusion. Because now we see with the student, now they've come to the point, the graduation, so they're supposed to know what's going on, overcoming the illusion, and are able to see things, that balance between sub-dharma and dharma in its proper context. Right? So then he says the same for Vasudev, Chaturbhuja, Sarveshwara, and Achyuta. And he has done this to overcome illusion, arrive at truth, right? He's accomplished the vow, means he's taught the brahmachari how to properly behave so he could go out into the world and, you know, take part as a proper member of society, you know, a valuable member of society, a leader of society, that they can see how to see their life in the context of dharma and sub-dharma. That the acharya should sit facing north on kusa tips, facing north. Okay, so this is the time, because they're facing north anyway, so that means from his position, he just turns. He turns towards the north, right? So this is, you know, one of the few times that you're facing the direction of the kusa tips. Then the brahmachari should take a pot of hot and cold water mixed together, which also contains rice, barley, dal, mung dal, sarva, oshadi, herbs, and chandan. So this is not a pot of hot and cold water mixed. This is not, okay, so then warm water. No. Cold water, hot water. It means you brought water up to make it hot, you know, or you boil it. You have cold water. You pour them together. It gives a different effect. Just like if you drink cold water, or room temperature water, and you drink water that's been boiled hot, it has a different effect. So it has a different effect on the whole system and everything like that. So when it says here, mix of hot and cold, means it's hot. It doesn't have to be that temperature now, but it was, you took hot water and cold water, and by mixing them, it creates a particular action. So then rice, barley, dal, mung dal, sarva, shadi, herbs and chandan, all that together, you put all that together, and then it has its particular auspicious nature. Brahmachari should fill his hands with this mixture and pour it on the ground, saying, you know, so they fill his hands, you know, the same where they take the hands, you know, put together so that the palms there, and then the fingers go over, so it's like that, and then he can pour without it falling out. So he can say the mantra and then pour. In this water, Narayana, Ananta, and others have entered. I reject the inauspicious fires which cover, which conceal, which contaminate, which cause pain, and bring destruction to the mind, body, and senses. Right? So here we see then, like we see on Narayana, then, you know, Lord of the Living Entities, Maintainer, Ananta, who then supports everything, and others, means however much is his ability and understanding, you know, either at that time or as will develop, you know, from being a graduate of the Lord and his taking part in his life. So inauspicious fires which cover. So the inauspicious fires means we saw before in the yajna that you're going to take out this, all the fires are, when you light a match or start fire, all the fires are there. Right? So then, But that's for any form of fire. So then you take out the two fires that deal with the cremation ceremony and that kind of thing. So then it's going to have, they're going to have their variety of whatever it is that's inauspicious fire. So they cover, can seal, contaminate, cause pain, bring destruction to mind, body, and senses. So this can mean any kind of thing where there's fire. Anger is fire. These moods and all these kind of things which cover these, and you don't feel, you don't, you become an illusion, conceal, that you're using all kinds of politics and trickery and things like that that don't bring out properly. People don't become, understand. There's no proper understanding what's doing, or it conceals from you because of your anger. You can't see what's proper. Contaminate, the consciousness becomes contaminated, cause pain. It's going to cause pain to you. It's going to cause pain to others, whoever you're dealing with, and bring destruction to the body, mind, and senses, because everything in the environment you're dealing with, because of this envy and all that, is going to create envy and attachment. It's going to create destruction, right? Somebody's disturbed, they're going to destroy everything. So you see, as you get down to here, somebody, okay, they've done something you don't appreciate, so you just ignore them and don't involve yourself with them because they're just not trustworthy. But then you see that some will say, I've been wrong, so they have to completely destroy the person. And they won't stop until the degree of their envy, they won't stop until that envy has so-called been satisfied. And so if it's utter and total destruction, or it's just they've shown them who's boss, or they've done something to, punish them in some way so that they'll so-called remember, like that and things like that. Like, so these kind of elements, then it removes that, because this kind of stuff is not of any value in human society. It means you'll see it's there because the living entity is conditioned, so it will come up and you know it's part of it, but it has in no way any benefit for society. No one's doing anybody any benefit by using these inauspicious fires for performing things in their life and stuff like this. It can also mean inauspicious, where you're going in, you're getting to the tantric things and everything like that, and whatever has been using fire in these ways, or cooking without offering to Krishna, anything, because all of those things that are not about raising consciousness will cause all these things: pain, destruction of the body, mind, and senses, illusion, contamination, and concealment. Right? The student should take water again and pour on the ground, saying, "I abandon that what is terrible, cruel, and violent in this water." Right? Because now he's showing the point of that in this water, Ananta and others are there because it's the potency of the Lord. So that means the relationships and the tastes that are gained in this, right? Then is an uplifting and glorifying thing. So that means anything in water, anything in rasa, or relationships, that interaction, what you gain from relationships, the experience, anything that is terrible, cruel, and violent that you might do in relationships, like we say with the envy, the envy and attachments, that you'll go beyond, up and over, you'll go beyond what is required, what is necessary to move forward in Krishna consciousness, and protect what is your situation. So then it goes beyond. So terrible, cruel, and violent. It doesn't mean that, let's say, like the king, his kingdom and his citizens are being disturbed by others, then he may stop that and root it out so it can't happen anymore. But you say you use it's terrible, you cruel, you use it, but it's not about that. It's not a mentality of that. He may be using the tools of that to deal with people who themselves are terrible, cruel, and violent. Because people who are terrible, cruel, and violent, if they don't, if by the subtler means of speaking and things like that, and discussing with them based on higher qualities of life and how to move forward, if they don't do that, then you have to use danda. They have to be corrected. So that's there, but then it's the job of the king. It's not the job of your neighbor to destroy you because they didn't like a comment you said about them. like that. They behave badly, you made a comment, now they must destroy you. That's not their business. It's not their duty. While the king's duty is, yes, to see that there's peace in the society. Yeah. So that means he in himself will try to give up all these different things like that, because now after this he'll get married, so he shouldn't deal in a bad way, in a terrible, cruel, or violent way, or these other elements covered by illusion. And then, you know, things go nicely there. You know, he's going to be doing an occupation. He shouldn't deal like that there. He's going to be dealing with the community, you know, friends, family, and greater community and nation. He shouldn't deal like that there. So these things have to be controlled. Because as the brahmachari, you may see or not see these things. It means, of course, there's always going to be something, because the child tends to be a little self-centered, you know, without training. And so then those things are there, but you're not dealing, there's not much attachment, there's not much control, there's not much, all these different things. You're living simply, so you may not see all these angles come up. But when you, one graduates, then you're going to be working in the greater world, dealing with people that are beyond what's in the ashram, because the ashram would be very controlled, it's a brahminical environment. When you go out in the world, then you're going to see as maybe a community as that, but the greater world is not necessarily functioning under brahminical aspect. You know, like before you'd see the kshatriya aspect as prominent, and nowadays you see the vaishya and shudra as prominent. So before brahmin kshatriya, now it's vaishya and shudra. So then, you know, these qualities may have opportunity to rise because of the situations, how people are dealing. So you want to avoid that they unnecessarily come up, or they come up and aren't dealt with in the proper way. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. Directed by the acharya, the student should sprinkle some of the water on himself, saying, "Be present here, Varaha. I sprinkle myself with this water." Right? So then, here becomes the aspect. Varaha, then he's the Lord of sacrifice. So, therefore, you're giving up all these inauspicious qualities and endeavors, because fire also can mean, fire can also mean action, right? Because without fire, without time, without these things, there's no movement. And then there's no movement, there's no transaction, there's no transformation of anything. So therefore, the Abhideya always has this element, you can say, of movement of that, which requires fire. Right, muscles move because of the nerves. Nerves move because of fire. Fire moves because of the air pressing on it. That's why we saw before, you do everything with the life airs, that they're all proper and not doing that. Then next, that pushes on fire. That's going to push on all the qualities that you may have and everything, relations like that. So it's a natural thing. So Varaha being the Lord of sacrifice and everything being done in context of its relation to the Lord, then everything will be perfect. So that water, all those, you know, what experiences and relationships and moods that come up, then by that water, in connection with Varaha or connection with sacrifice, he sprinkles himself with this. Right? So this is now where you see he's becoming sanatika, or bathed. Right? This is the point that's there. Directed by the acharya, the student should fill his hands with water and sprinkle himself again, saying, "This is for fame, for energy, for knowledge, for strength, for the senses, for courage, for sustenance, for wealth and prosperity, for brilliance and respect." Right? Because all these things are going to come. They're opulences of the Lord. So these are all going to come because you're doing pious activities with pious qualities and pious purpose. Right? And so when then you see all these nice qualities come. So by sad-dharma, that's the quickest way that you're going to do these are going to come, because by doing everything to please Krishna, you know, in other words, like I said, for Varaha, then for sacrifice for the Lord, then naturally all the qualities of the demigods come, and then all these things, fame, energy, knowledge, strength for the senses, you know, that the senses work properly, for courage, sustenance, wealth, prosperity, brilliance, and respect. These will all come up nicely. Naturally. It means the devotee is automatically has all these nice qualities and is respected and famous. You know, is always engaged in the Lord's service. You know, that energy is there. You know. So this is not just the physical energy, it's also the mental energy, because the point is the mental energy is there. Then it works. You know, mental energy is there, the courage, like that, like that. The strength can also be physical, but also means there, just like you see, just like in Jaipadak Marsh. Now, he physically, you can't say he has any strength. But you see, he's always engaged, always busy, always traveling, always doing things that most anyone else in his position wouldn't be doing. That's because of this energy, knowledge, and strength, you know, courage, like that, these aspects. Therefore, he's doing that. So it's not dependent on the body. The modern thing is you go to the gym, build up, now you're strong. No, you're strong if your character is strong. If that's there, then everything works very nicely. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, because if that's there, because Brahmins aren't known that they're physically necessarily strong, but they have, you know, Brahma Tejas, they have that strength of the Brahmins, like that. Yeah. You know, courage also means to do the right thing. Because you see a lot of, many, you know, they don't want to dress as devotees, is due to lack of courage. And, oh, someone will find fault and all that, and I can't tolerate that. I feel so bad and all this, so I don't know what to do, or my false ego is so great that I would feel so bad if someone criticized me. And all. They don't have courage. So the whole point is things happen, things change in society, are upgraded because of this courage. But it has to be based on knowledge, right? Sustenance, you're maintained by the Lord. Wealth and prosperity, these are all engaged in sacrifice. Brilliance and respect. Brilliance means that relationships are going nicely. The interaction is very nice. You know, respect, you respect others, they respect you. So you have these qualities, others will reciprocate with you based on these qualities. He should sprinkle himself with water again, saying, bathe me with those things which attain fame by serving you, right? Means to the Lord. Songs of praise, your bed, feet, shoes, umbrella, fan, sacred thread, and cloth. So, in other words, all that fame by serving you means all those things connected with the Lord, all the paraphernalia of the Lord, all the service being rendered to the Lord, they all those. So like your bed, seat, shoes, umbrella, fan, sacred thread, and cloth, these are all glorious. These are all expansions of Balaram, that he comes as these forms to serve the Lord. And so in that way, because the jivas, they expand from Balaram, then they in the same capacity want to act in a way of assisting in the Lord's pastimes. Assistance in the Lord's pastimes, like that. And so, therefore, then they're respecting all those that are there before them. Because in the spiritual world, they're all conscious. The umbrella is conscious. The fan is conscious. They're all devotees. Because they're all expanding from Balaram. Right? They just happen to be, you know, forms of Vishnu Tattva or his energies, however he, you know, whatever is the particular determination on how he's dealing with these things with Krishna. If everybody else, then they have these things. So the power of them is coming from the Lord also. So the idea is that your will assist, you know, servant of the servant of the servant in the Lord's pastimes. It's not that I'm the big guy, because he just said for fame, energy, all those things, attain fame, but your fame, you're known as a devotee. People see you as devotee. I mean, in other words, you're acting in such a capacity that others will call you a devotee, whether you consider yourself a devotee or not, but at least that others are seeing you in that capacity means at least you're engaged in the proper activities, whether your mentality is caught up with the position that you're there, but at least you're satisfied that it's you're doing those things which are pleasing to Krishna, whether you're having the mentality to properly please, but at least that's your endeavor, that's your intent. While standing facing east, looking at the deity of Vishnu, he should praise the deity, saying, right? So in other words, the Acharya is there and he's faced the Acharya, right? Now he faces the deity, right? He should praise the deity, saying, Narayana, shining with all-pervading light, the king of all forces of nature, stands with the months, his associates in the morning. You are the bestower of 10 gifts. Make me the giver of 10 gifts. I go towards you. Please come towards me. Right? So we see his all Narayana, because he maintains everything. He's the one, Narayana. He is the one who maintains the living entities. Right, so all pervading light means everything. All pervading light is the shining of his qualities. right? His qualities are so magnificent that they shine. There's an effulgence to them. Just like if somebody's manifesting some good qualities, they have an effulgence to them. Like that. King of all forces of nature means all the laws of nature, all the things, all the shastra, everything that defines how it everything works, how everything functions in the cosmos. That's all coming from Narayana. So he stands with the months as associates because the months then are time. Time, one of his associates. And so therefore he's always with time, right, in the form of Sudarshana, like that. And so then there, you know, he, in the morning, you're, so 10 gifts that he gives so many things. You know, he's got 10. He gives, may I also, like that, be a giver of 10 gifts. May I just not get everything that I should be giving, right? I go towards you, please reciprocate that by coming towards me, right? Then the next one, he does this. Oh, no, he say, yeah, then the next mantra. Narayana shining with all-pervading light. The king of all forces of nature stands with the months, his followers in the daytime. You are the bestower of 100 gifts. Make me the giver of 100 gifts. I go towards you, please come towards me. So, he stands with the months, right? Because the months, we also saw that time is that all things are done there. You have Kartik is the month, Magha is the month, Chaitra the month, all these different times when they're auspicious, or the two months together make a season. Three seasons together make the ayana, you know, the Uttarayana and the Dakshinayana, then all six seasons together then make the year. So that way the time has 12 spokes for the year. So that's, you know, all these different aspects. So now it's 100 gifts that it's expanding. You know, so in the morning, 10 gifts, in the daytime, then it's 100 gifts, you know, that I may come towards you, you come towards me. And then Narayana, the Supreme Lord, shining with all-pervading light. Stands with the forces of nature, stands with the months, his friends, in the evening. Right. So in the morning, it was his associates in the morning, his followers in the daytime, and his friends in the evening. You are the bestower of 1,000 gifts. Make me a bestower. Make such a bestower of me. I am attempting to approach you. Please come towards me. Right. Yeah. So this. Then the fourth one. You are the Supreme Lord in the heart of all living entities. You are the all-pervading guide of all souls, the controller of all activities, the Lord of all living entities. You are the witness, the destroyer, the complete whole, transcendental to material nature. Then he chants the Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. Only the wise men who surrender unto the eternal of all eternals, the consciousness of all consciousness, the Lord who fulfills the desires of all living entities, who is situated in his own abode, attain eternal bliss. I pay obeisances again and again to Narayana. Right, so he's the Lord. All the living entities are eternals. He's the Lord of these eternals. They're all conscious. He's the Lord of all consciousness. He's the consciousness of that consciousness. Right. All the living entities have their desires in dealing with this aspect. It's the dynamic of Satchitananda that they exist. They perform, they, with qualities, they perform, and knowledge, they perform action. They get results to create happiness. They, you know, all that be done, you know, in, he fulfills all the desires. He situates his own place, you know, even though he controls everything here, because you pointed out here before is that, you know, about the all-pervading light, right? The first one and how the three features, you know, the Brahman, how he's controlling all living entities, everything like that. Then to the next one, I mean, he's the source of all that and that. He's giving, you know, he's expanding everything. So the first three, then the next one is then it's Paramatma, how he's there, and controlling the witness, the destroyer, the complete whole transcendental material nature. Then this one as Bhagavan, who he is the Lord of everyone. They're eternal because he's eternal. They're conscious because he's conscious. He has desire. He fulfills their desires because they have, you know, they're being part and parcel. He's in his own abode, separate from all this. And that then he, one who knows that, they attain the eternal bliss, because when they know him as Bhagavan, then they attain. If they only know him as God, And that, then they can either move forward to this, then attain that position, or they'll move back to the impersonal and attain a temporary form of spiritual bliss, right? Like that. The student, yeah, and then he offers his obeisance again and again to Narayan. The student should take off his kusa belt by lowering it to his feet while saying, slip the noose, the varuna, the impediments in life from the upper part of my body, from the lower part of my body, and from the middle. Then let us, free from sin, be fixed in performing service to you for the welfare of all. Right, so yeah, Varuna, the noose of Varuna catches you because of sinful activity, so may he give all that. Right, that's the impediments of life, is going, not following the Vedic literatures and following what one's supposed to do. And that's from the upper, lower, and the middle part of the body. I mean, from all parts of the body, everything has its, you know, brain thinks so many things, you know, all this, the arms and that protect and all that situation, the life airs, the digestion, feet, all, you know, all movement, all thought, everything of body, mind, and words, may all that be removed from that, there's no sin or anything like that. And that, then let us be free from sin. Then be fixed in performing service to you for the welfare of all. Like if we do service to Krishna, then we're benefiting everybody. If we're benefiting ourselves, pleasing Krishna, then all Krishna being pleased, all other living entities will be pleased and benefited. And so then that's the idea. So does that make sense? Then let us, free from sin, in other words, give up all the sinful mentality, interest in anything distracting from devotional service. And in that mentality, let us be fixed in the service of the Lord, right? So we move from the neophyte to that Madhyam platform. Then we become fixed like this and working actually for the welfare of all. That means the para upakara, then teaching them about Krishna consciousness. So we're practicing it ourselves. We're not trying to give it to others. Right, because now they're going out, now on their own, they may be engaged in activities for the benefit of others. So let that be, let that go on nicely. Does that make sense? Yeah. The acharya should throw the student's upanayanam danda into the fire. The acharya should, you know, because he had danda for there, because now we'll get a new stick, right? The acharya should perform the vyasta samasta mahavyarati homa. He should then throw ghee soaked wood of Pradesh linked in the fire silently. He should now perform all the rites of Aditya Karma, beginning with Satyayana Homa at the end of Vamadevi Ganam. Brahmacharya should feed the assembled Vaishnavas, then he should take a meal himself. Right? This is after. So remember the question, I mean, there's some discussion before about do the people who are serving prasad, do they take prasad before or after? So if one has the capacity and that religious nature, he takes after. If he has the capacity, I mean, he has the religious nature, but maybe not the capacity. Like I remember one of my god brothers, senior, very real culture. I think it was Subhag Maharaj. Yes. Then when he got older, then, you know, he was getting some physical difficulty. He went to the doctor. The doctor told him, don't fast. Always eat something. You know, and better is the more times you eat a day, the better. You know, so in your typical, they'll have something in the early morning, then breakfast, and, you know, something later lunch, and something in the afternoon, something in the evening, but it's small. You know, it gets smaller as you go. So the whole idea is he couldn't fast. So therefore, he might, you know, in this case, whatever it is, but we're just saying about in serving prasad, if he takes something before, just enough to get him through, then like that. It's not that you have to, you eat so much that you can't eat anymore and everything like that, and then you go to serve prasad. That's not going to work very well. So when you say they eat before, it means that they eat something before. It doesn't have to be a lot. Like it says, brahmacharya before the upanayanam ceremony, he given a little bit to eat, you know, because it's a long ceremony and everything like that. So it's just something. It's not that you have to pack it in. So even if we're talking about devotees and serving, let's say, Sunday feast or a big, you know, feast covered on, means they take something. They don't have to, they shouldn't eat until they can't eat anymore. Because then afterwards they can sit and eat, you know, have a proper meal like that. You just have to see how it works. Because many people after eating full till they're packed to the gills, they're not going to serve prasad very well anyway, because they're too full to serve and they have no interest in food. So they're not going to be encouraging to others. They're just going to go through the motions to get it done. So if you're talking about it, they get a little something, you know, something interesting, and that, and then, you know, like that. Shaving his face, head and face, cutting his nails, he should then bathe, put on two pieces of new cloth and ornaments. He should put on two new yogi pavitras, two sets of three strings, right? Because as the brahmachari, he only wears one set because it's just for himself. But if he's going to be a snataka, that means now he's graduating and getting married. So now he wears two sets. That's going to be one for him and one for in the future if he gets married, because the other set's for his wife. So women don't wear the thread because their husband wears the thread. Right? Does that make sense? You know, or if they're in the house and the father's wearing the threads, so then that works like that. You should put on two yajna pavitras, two sets of three, saying, "You are the thread for yajna. I bind you with this thread for performing yajna." Yeah. So then the threads are for yajna. Means it's the sign of someone who does yajna. That's why it's prestigious. It's not that you wear it for prestige. You wear it to perform yajna. That makes you famous. Not that you wear it for fame. Because then that's not brahminical at all. Then I bind you with this thread for performing yajna. So then you always are wearing. It's always there. You know, so one should always be engaged in yajna. You should put on a garb. Yes.
Sorry if I'm going a little off the topic. But when somebody is given a pancharatrik initiation, then he should wear two, or if he's a brahmachari, or
if he's a brahmachari, because the thing is yeah, because they haven't necessarily, means if he's gotten second initiation, so he has the upanayanam. I would have it. The point is that generally, I recommend means if you don't really worry about these things and all that, because when you buy Brahmin threads, that because when you buy them, there's always six, right? And so, therefore, they come like that. You wear them like that. I would just say it's not so important because no one's really worried about it anyway, and nobody knows, right? If you're making your own threads, then you can decide what you're going to do.
Okay.
Right? Because the brahmachari typically wears only one set. So if someone's just a brahmachari, he's making it himself, he can just wear one set. Right? But now, if you're in Bengal, the Bengalis, then they, as a tradition, always wear, all Brahmins wear nine strings, so three sets. Because they take it for the nine qualities of a Brahmin. So therefore, you have to have that. I've even had once, because you're riding on the train, I think from Calcutta to Mayapur. We're riding on the train and standing there, you know, like that. And some, one of the local, you know, punk Brahmins, punk Bengalis, you know, how you say, big enough to make trouble, but not old enough to be mature enough that they don't. He came up from behind and actually started counting the threads. Right. And I think that because I already knew that that's a, you know, how it was. So I think I've been wearing nine threads, was always wearing nine threads, you know, since the '70s. So it was okay. I had nine. So I was, you know, that was good. But at the same time as, you know, you're a Westerner, this, that, you know, they always have to find some fault. So I would recommend those who are Bengalis or those who are connected with Mayapur, Bengal, or that environment, to wear nine, just that's less trouble from the local. If you're anywhere else in India, you wear six, that's fine because that's what they all wear. If you're in South India where they're more aware of that, I would tend to wear one. If you know and you're in that scene like that. You know, if you're always wearing a kurta, never wearing unstitched cloth, then, you know, whatever you wear, it doesn't matter. No one's going to see it anyway. But if you're much of the time wearing unsewn cloth, you're going to be seen and you take part in the pujas and the abhishekes and festivals where you would be wearing. Then I would say it's depending upon that as a brahmachari who's not planning to get married, then I would say wear one set or three. If they say why
general.
one, that's for brahmacharis, and if they say why three, that's for Brahmins in Bengal. And we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas, so no one can really get upset about that.
In general, Prabhupada gave them six for everybody.
Because that's what comes. You buy a pack of Brahmin threads, that's what comes. But if you know this, you can always, when you do it, take one, take it apart, only put on one and keep the other for next time. That way your bundle of Brahmin threads will go twice as long, right? Instead of, because they generally sell them in groups of 12, for every month you put it on in Purnima. So you get like that. You can go for 2 months or, say like Pandava, then he can share it with Tulsi. And stuff like that, and so then get one bundle and I say get one, buy 1 year's, get 1 year's free, right? So stuff like that, so it's up to the thing, but the point is I would always wear nine because of just the Gaudiya Vaishnav and the Bengal and like that, and so that's where I did that. But otherwise, and in South you just need to wear one because then he explained. But even if South you wear nine, they ask, and then why nine? Because that's generally also means that would be the Grihas, means he's wearing six, the Snatka. But once he gets married, he puts on and he does puja, as a Brahmin, then he wears one more set. So the Brahmins would wear nine, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas would just wear the six. Right, unless they're always doing puja and all that. If you have a king or if every morning does their puja, then they could wear nine, because the third set is for your upper cloth, because just in case somehow or another you have to do some of the puja and you don't have your chudder with you, or can't use it, by wearing the thread it's there. Let's say you're doing some cleaning on the altar, you don't want to wear your chudder around, so then the thread is the upper cloth, that third one. So one for you, one for the wife, one for the upper cloth. So therefore nine. And then the Bengalis, then, because that's standard amongst the married Brahmins, then they say that's the brahminical, the nine qualities. And then they don't make the distinction between the various levels. That's more of a Vedic thing. And so therefore, and they tend to be more tantric and all that. So they just nine threads for everybody. Does that make sense?
Got it. Yes, my God. Thank you.
Yeah, and then the sannyasi, if he's been to Grihastha and all that, when he takes sannyas, he could put on one more. So he could wear 12 strings. Or he can go back to wearing what the brahmachari wears, only one set, three strings.
Yes.
So that's the tattva of the Brahman thread. Yes, no?
Yes, Maharaj, it's telling.
Okay, very good. Okay, yeah. So it shows that it's someone who is trained and qualified to do yajna. So that's why it's worn. That's its purpose. Right? It's not that you wear a Brahmin thread so you can strangle your finger every time that you chant Gayatri. It's not there to turn your thumb purple 3 times a day. Does that make sense? It's there because you're going to do sacrifice. You're going to be engaged in some part. The sankirtan, Harinam sankirtan, book distribution, some variety of preaching, the deity worship, the ceremonies that go along with it, everything like that. That's the idea, right? And then along with that, then you get something to wrap around your thumb, keep your thumb company while you chant. Should put on a garland saying you are prosperity and establish that in me, because you're prosperous if you're doing the right activity. You're not going to be prosperous if you're doing the wrong activities. We saw before. That's just the way it is. That's how it works. So yeah, you can be temporarily prosperous because you have been pious previously and that will be running. So you're running here and it's going down, so it looks like you're not doing any pious, so you're going down, and so then it will meet at some point. They will match. He should put on shoes saying, because up to this point he doesn't wear shoes. He can wear the peg shoes like that or go barefoot, But generally speaking, they don't wear shoes traditionally, because the leather shoes that was meant for grihasthas. You are my eyes, please lead me to the Supreme Lord, right? So shoe means you're walking on the path, so that means then you're walking in the correct direction and all that, right? He should receive a bamboo danda of his own height, saying, you are made by Narayana. You are the revealer of truth. Please be favorable to me. So this is knowledge. So before he had his chadar, his brahmacharya deer skin, now he has his danda, and that, and it was also the knowledge revealer of truth, you know. So then this continues, right? He has the new cloth. He should place his deer skin and old upavita on the danda, right? So then, you see that in the, with the, the only ones I've seen that have, that you can see an example of that's with the Madhvas. When they're, you know, they become brahmacharis and that they study, then when they take sannyasa, that, then their danda, they do that, they tie that to their danda. So there's a piece of the deer skin is tied, wrapped around the middle, and then their thread then ties it, or the thread's inside, then it's that, and then it's tied. And so then, you know, it just shows that it's been there. It's not just a stick, because anybody can use a bamboo stick and walk around. See, farmers use it, everybody uses it. But here you see, because the deer skin and the old upavita, like that, then you understand, okay, here's a Brahmin, here's a Snataka. Okay, how are we doing on time? Okay. Then, okay, yeah, because we saw the this is truth, knowledge, like that, and yajna, so all that's combined together. You should look at the acharya saying, let me be graced by you, by your glance upon me, right, with the blessings of the teacher, may go forward, because mother, father, and teacher, these are relationships that you have for your whole life, like that. He should sit beside the acharya and place the fingers of his right hand in front of his mouth, right? You know, like this, so that the breath touches his hands, means it's close enough that it's there, so he doesn't stick it out here, and he's not, you know. He should say, O tongue, covered by fickle lips and surrounded by teeth, do not stray. Speak sweet words for me here today. So, you know, it means, may my speech always be nicely controlled, speak nicely, deal nicely. And all that, I won't use sharp language. Charya should worship the graduate by washing his feet, etc. Right? So he's spoken all these things about, you know, his determination to be freed from all sins and body, mind, and words, everything be connected with the Lord. You know, everything's being done as sacrifice. He may be glorious by that. That means he's doing nicely. It's not about the wealth and that himself and the fame. It's about that I'm doing the things that cause that, because connected with the Lord, it will always generate that. Like artha always comes from dharma. You perform dharma, artha will be there. So you're not doing the dharma for artha. You're doing the dharma to be dharma. But the test is the artha in this way, you know, if the Lord pleases. Okay, he should wash his feet and that. So that, you know, we see here then, because now he's a snataka, he's a respectable Brahmin. So the acharya then worships, you know, just like we see is that when you weren't begging and going out as a brahmacharya, you first go to your mother, because it's going to be, she's going to appreciate and respect. She's going to give you a nice donation, start off the process. So in here, people respecting in that as a Brahmin, then it first starts with the acharya. Okay. So we'll end here for today. Om Hare Krishna. Hey, Prabhupada ki jai.